Abe here, and I wanted to let you know that if you're able, you can upgrade your small beans skill over at patreon.com/smallbeans. Here's why you should do that. If you pledge 5 measly beans a month, you get access to about half our podcasts that you don't get if you're just listening to the free feed. Shows include Star Trek The Next Futurama, Spiel Boys, Like Razor Blade Pie, and bonus episodes of I'll Show You Mine If You Show Me Yours. Not to mention bonus content including info and updates on the movie we're making, Papa Bear. Hey, where's all the reasons to not subscribe to Patreon? I can't find them. Anyway, back to the show.
You're about to hear the recorded audio diaries of Michael Swain, Adam Ganzer, and Abe Epperson, transmitted to you from another dimension through the wonder of podcast technology. Lost in the multiverse, they have to dig into a different piece of multiversal fiction each episode in the hopes of finally discovering a way back to their reality. How do they know this isn't their reality? Because one of them is being a real asshole. Will our heroes ever make it home, or will they inadvertently explore our obsession with multiverses, alternate timelines, and parallel worlds, and tie it all into a conversation about postmodern art, pop culture, and what it means to be a human right now? This is Escape from the Multicurse.
There was a time this was my Ghostbusters, or at least...
What's that mean?
The thinking man's Donnie Darko. Like, I was so loyal to this movie. I think people are overly loyal to the Ghostbusters, more than it deserves in terms of whether you gauge it as a movie.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Hot take.
And I just mean I was an apologist. Or by the Donnie Darko thing, I mean... snobby.
Yeah.
Do you think you're still right?
Are you still loyal to it?
I wasn't going to drop this so fast, but me, my real opinion, I've completely flipped. I watched it. This is my 6th or 7th time watching it. And this time I thought, you know what? This is shoddy bullshit. It's pretentious and it's dumb. I don't think I like it anymore.
It's pretentious and dumb. Yeah. So wow. So no half measures for Michael Swain.
It's funny.
It's either all in or all out.
I've completely switched binary. Yeah.
You know, I showed it to my son, Andrew. He's 10 now for the first time. And he was really
binary,
into it.
1-0.
Yeah. I was surprised it translated for him, actually. But, you know, he's really science mind. He's doing pretty great in school, too. It was nice.
Hey.
Yeah, he really liked it.
So there's something. I enjoy this movie, although yeah. I know what Swain's talking about. This movie, by the way, we're talking about is Primer. You have stumbled upon Escape from the Multicurse.
Dun, dun, dun.
Woo! I'm Abe. Michael, speak.
Bark, bark.
And Adam, speak.
I am here and not barking.
Okay, good.
It's a great bit.
So we three are going to talk about Primer for a bit, which is one of the movies that the internet loves to talk about, although it's so old now. It's 2005.
Yeah.
That, like, it's not really in the zeitgeist anymore. But this was the debut of writer-director Shane Carruth, who also made Upstream Color. And he's known for making very cerebral and kind of expositionless movies that you have to do a lot of work, almost like a puzzle, like straight up. A lot of people watch this movie if you want to like attain exactly what this movie is all about and get all of the like pieces, all your ducks in a row. You almost have to watch it with like a companion, like a fucking game facts.
YouTube, you know, like usually. It's kind of like the same textural experience as playing The Return of Obra Dinn, if that tracks for people.
Yeah, it's almost like playing a video game.
Yeah.
Because you have to kind of, if you play video games that way, in order, you have to cite kind of like other material to get the full picture. Some people like that. Others
Did Little Andy compare it to anything from the child's perspective? Like, is it like Bluey anything I won't know?
He didn't really have that frame of reference because, you know, we're pretty careful about what he watches, obviously. But Kelsey, she's a bit older. She's 17 now, and she actually did mention Obra Dinn She's a real gamer now.
She did.
She did.
That's old considering your age. Yeah. I didn't realize. They grow up so fast. She's 18 now.
Well, you know, first of all, please don't do that. It's about my child. That's insane.
On his imaginary daughter.
What do you mean imaginary?
Oh, she's 17. Wait, retracted.
First of all, yeah. What?
Yeah, what are you doing? What's going on?
What is the worst thing that's being said right now? I don't know. There's a long litany of
it. I'm surrounded by a bunch of assholes.
But what'd she compare it to from her modern zeitgeist?
Well, she actually mentioned Oberdin, which is funny because she just got into PC gaming. But it's because we bought her a PC last year for college applications and stuff. And she's doing great, by the way, on all that stuff. Like, she's looking like she's going to get into Georgetown.
Not what I asked.
I'm sorry.
Don't care.
I get started on Kelsey.
We got to stay on video games.
Forgive me. No,
what did
she
compare it to, if anything?
She made the same comparison you did. That's what I was saying. Forgive me. I didn't mean to go off on a tangent.
What a waste of time.
I find that...
Are you quarterbacking this one?
Well, I'm trying to, but you guys are off doing whatever the fuck you're doing, so...
I'm yes-anding. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to survive, man. So, here we go. We kind of investigate this, and I can take this, because I haven't talked for a bit. Let's examine this from the frame of reference of, is this unique in multiverse stories or time travel stories or time loop stories in a segment we call the multi-map. I'll take it first. I think that it's unique in that it brought a lo-fi version of time travel to kind of the zeitgeist. It doesn't like open a portal or go into like a dimension. It's just kind of pitched as a coin flip. There is a box. But like the concept is there's a percentage chance that as the loop cycle goes around, you'll come out of it and you've gone through time if you exit at the right time.
And in real time backwards.
Right. So like if you go into it, so it's a cycle from A to B, and we can explain the science a little bit more, but it's not that interesting. But it just
it's
keeps cycling
just
between these
an
times.
East to west flight.
Yeah,
if you fly east to west, you go back in time in that way.
It's kind of like that, but less, but not imaginary like our time zones.
Right.
But rather, if you get into the box, if you get in the box at point B, like when the box is turned off, and it's still running because it's going, it's looping, it's still powered, and you can actually exit at point A before you entered it. So that's how you can relive like a day. You live a day, go back, relive that day. And
well, sit in a
different
box that day, is just to be clear. Well, that's what they do.
Well, they drug themselves to sleep through
right,
it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And now it's different. I think that's different from like portal time travel, which is a lot cleaner because you go to a moment of time and then you travel to another moment of time and usually return to the present. Like if we're talking like Back to the Future, right? And here the present is in flux and time travel is really dirty. Because it creates alternates. So there's always the possibility of fuck-ups or sabotage, which is what the movie kind of goes into. And also, it's the lowest budget movie we've ever covered. It took $7,000 to make because they just shot it on, like, no film, basically, and rented or borrowed equipment. So they can only do so much stuff, and it kind of lived and died on that lo-fi aspect of it. Anyone wants to add?
It's so lo-fi. It's so lo-fi that they like thanked their parents for making snacks and stuff in the credits, which is like you're really getting lo-fi when the parents get credited for snacks. Like,
yeah, it's really
that's as cheap as it gets. I mean, like we have several live-in servants at this point in our estate, and like we wouldn't even bother crediting them on a film, even if we were funding it ourselves. That's how lo-fi it really is.
I have to break reality and point out that he said it would take a while for the bit to develop. It seems like it's developing very quickly to me.
Yeah, Kelsey, Andrew, and...
What are you talking about,
we'll
man?
We'll figure it out.
Okay, that was an aside.
About,
that
man?
Was a Shakespearean
I'm just Adam
aside.
Ganser.
Yeah, you can't. No. I'll go next. It uses it to create, well, first, what you said is true about it being like the Clerks of Sunshines, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It takes that level of shoddy production and makes a tense thriller, which is quite a challenge working from basically just your mom's RV or whatever the situation was. But I also think it is the only one probably that will cover that uses the multiverse to try and solve a hypothetical problem, which is every time travel movie is bullshit because of this reason, so many nerdy picking it apart like crack style reasons. Let's do the best we can to make one that's genuinely engaging where the time travel tracks. And it's almost like the Futurama episode where they switch brains constantly and that mathematically tracks backwards. They just wanted to prove it could be done, that the time travel works out. And we'll talk about how that worked out in Verses on Verses. But first, Adam gets to do.
Yeah.
His multi-map.
Yeah, well, I'm not gonna lie to you. I definitely had one of my kids do some research on this one just to help me out because I'm busy these
days. The third unrelated kid.
Hank. Yeah. He got excited about it. He likes to do reports and stuff. He's our little genius. Anyway, so as he wisely pointed out to me, I was like, "That's true. I don't think it does make sense. Like, I think the creation of alternate people." Is always a logistical problem. Like it's okay. We overlook it in movies like Back to the Future where like it's schmaltzy enough, but the creation of two people that can occupy the plate, like the same place at the same time creates to me a multiverse, like problem that has to be resolved. And, I think it's strange, particularly if we have to travel backwards in time, to the recursive traveling back in time aspect of it is interesting because it
Lupa.
Yeah, like they don't develop much the idea that it's doing something biologically bad to these guys, but it's sort of present in the background of the film. It just feels like a little bit half baked, but it's so aggressively like we're doing it right that you think they're right. It feels like a bluff to me. This movie feels like a bluff. The same with like Donnie Darko feels like a bluff to me, where it's like, you'll see it all works out. And it's like, well, no, you leapt over all the difficult, tricky things to do it. And I think, and this is like really a harsh critique of it, because I didn't really like the movie that much, I'll be honest with you. I mean, I was a little bit distracted because I got some calls from some investors and stuff that, you know, I tell them not to call late, but sometimes they do. That's the price of success, guys. You know, it's okay.
Are you the Jack Snacks guy? Am I getting that right? Three body problem? Anybody? Yeah. Timely.
Thank you.
Timely.
No, so the point being that I thought this movie actually didn't have a lot of substance to it. Like, I think that it used procedure and...
No,
like,
not substance. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
It's mathematics. Yeah.
Well, but it's not even that. Like, it's daring in the sense
now
that
now I've switched to Abe's side. This is Verses on Verses. Let's get into Verses on Verses. Because I want to... I guess I'm just being selfish because I want to respond. But yeah, I think my real answer is that it uses the multiverse to do something we'll probably never cover again, which is create a tedious busy work. That's how I saw it this time.
It really is. Like, and, it thinks the concept is really clever. Like, the movie thinks, like, this is such a clever idea that it can be revealed as though it's, like, lost or something, where there's a big truth at the bottom of it. And it's like, no, it's a pretty... I don't think it is that harsh. I mean,
I don't think it thinks it's the most... Well, I don't know.
Gotta say, I still really like Upstream Color, and I have to say this whenever it comes up, because I'm an apologist. Donnie Darko has an amazing lore that does make it make sense. You just have to, like, go online and ingest it, which is bullshit,
but it is pretty cool.
People are interested in extended universe stuff, it's neat.
I say this about video games all the time, although I have less and less time these days for video games, unfortunately, because the business has really taken off. But, if it's not in the thing, it doesn't exist to me. Like, I don't, like, outside research isn't.
Fair enough. Some people might be into it.
No. That's why it's okay as, like, a second piece of entertainment.
But back to Primer. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, I'm only coming at it this hard because. I understand that it's a very cheap movie that was made incredibly well by a very talented filmmaker for nothing, and I respect that. But that doesn't make it good. Like, it's not actually, it's not fundamentally emotionally interesting. right? Like, what's interesting emotionally about this?
Also, the acting is painfully bad in
sometimes.
Parts.
Yeah, yeah, sometimes. Yeah, but what's the emotional crisis in this movie that is that keeps us invested in it?
Betraying your best friend.
Yeah, relationships kind of? Breaking down because you can't handle the power of advancement.
But that stuff happens
being ethically
off-screen.
A moron a lot and of it. Scientifically accomplished.
Sure.
No, I mean, they talk about it. But yeah, there's no scene, I guess, where someone's crying.
That's true. Going, there is no crying scene.
What emotions?
You're right. Emotions, those are boring. Why would I want to watch that?
Forget no, the Abe and right. Aaron drama. It's Abe
it's
and Adam.
Supposed, yeah, it's supposed to be like, it is supposed to be scientific, but you're right. That chooses to forfeit, like, kind of the emotional side of this, which honestly, that's most movies don't do that. They're like, no, the emotions are the thing.
I mean, I don't know what movie is it does try science as the fundamental experience and is successful.
Like this movie,
I just don't think it is. You know, like I'm sure there's a legion of people out there who feel differently, but I just don't.
Right.
I don't see it.
Yeah, no, it doesn't work for you.
Yeah, I don't see it. I mean, and maybe I've seen stuff that's clearly derivative of this, and I respect it in that way that it's like, oh, this was it,
like Braid.
Yeah, this was yeah. Yes, Braid
$7,000 has a legacy. That's pretty crazy.
I agree.
I don't know why I choked on that word, but yeah, Braid.
Yeah, that is remarkable. I completely agree.
The nadir of the acting for me was the thing about tacos and steak. Anyone the tacos
yeah,
and
why
steak
tacos
scene stand
and steak?
Out to you? Because just like it reminded me of a video I posted
like
before. The first video I ever appeared in, THX1247, which
yeah.
is, or you know what? Those Are Muskets sketch, The Rookie, which mm-hmm. was the sketch we shot in Galbraith 157's hallways and shit.
Yeah. I remember that.
It just has that vibe sometimes. Like, it's a student film in the extreme, and there's something annoying about a student film that's like, I'm very, very smart. I'm a student. But setting that aside, I wanted to ask, Adam, did you watch it? Because I'll admit it, I still couldn't put it together. I think you, in theory, can figure it out, but it involves about 6 duplicates. So the
right.
only way I figured it out was watching a YouTube breakdown
right.
of what's actually happening. But there is a solution. Like, did you make
There's
yourself
solution,
aware of
yeah.
the solution?
I just, you know, man, I just don't have time. I got a full life now. You know, I got Saturday baseball games for Kelsey, and her team's going to the finals, it looks like. And, you know, we're so proud of her. I just don't have
sure.
time to.
Well, we're all proud. Now, follow up then. Could you enjoy it as like a Mulholland Drive? Like,
it's not,
the vibe of
it's the opposite.
Vibe of time travel threat.
It's the opposite of Mulholland Drive, though, because Mulholland Drive. The intrigue of it is the profound emotions going on that you're like, what's at the core of
Yurando.
This? Yeah. Well, there's something very deep and emotional happening and you're trying to figure out the what is happening part of it. This is the mm-hmm. opposite, where the emotions are often off camera, as are most of the major plot points. And it's a very dry film that's more clever than it is emotional. So no, because I'm not, it's not emotionally coherent. If it was, then
okay.
I would forgive it. All
right.
That.
Jesus. So, coherent. No, I kind of agree with you. But what about, so I have a question then that is just like, does anyone know the time travel math on this? Was there a shooting at the party?
Yeah.
Also, do we know what really happened at the party, or is the movie positing that we'll never know what originally happened at the party because all we're presented with is a version that's already been fucked with many times?
What we know, from what I understand, is we don't know the specifics. We never talked to that version because he's erased. But the Aaron character, the guy played by Shane Carruth, the writer and director and like cinematographer. And
Brown hair, Topher Grace.
And producer.
And producer.
All the jobs.
He basically... His character, there was an event at that party that something happened, and you assume if it's a shotgun, like, she got shot, probably, you know, or, like, something. Someone died. And he is determined from jump, once he sees that, those inner, that action, that he must undo that event. And that's what causes the causal loop. That's what causes also the duplicate for the first time.
And
so,
whether,
like,
yeah, go ahead.
It's a moment where he's like, okay, I have to do something and I have this machine. I'm doing it. I don't care because I can't live without, I can't live with the circumstances as they are.
And whether it succeeded or not, is that not at least it? That's its emotional core. And in fact, I think in a very engineer way, Shane Carruth is an engineer as well. It feels like the story he's trying to tell is they try to stay detached and they act like it's all just for this kind of sterile gain, but they get split apart by humanness and emotional stakes. You might not agree that it worked, but I think that was their attempt to give it an emotional core.
100%. My connecting point to it is I like the idea of this dream gets dark when it doesn't go the way you want it to go. You know what I mean? Like, and I think that's a true thing about human nature that's being explored here. And also one of the core things we're interested in multiverses, right? Is like this thought experiment of wish fulfillment, right? And most of us have wish fulfillment about how our life is supposed to go and sort of extrapolate into the future. And that's what time travel is about. It's what Back to the Future does. I mean, I know that when I decided not to pursue film when I was, you know, in my 20s and decided, hey, I'm just going to crack down on this business, that felt like a dream was dying. But I'm so grateful now that my family has turned out the way it has, you know, so I don't regret any of it. You know, it's interesting.
Yeah, you kind of change the playbook.
If that's a
right?
joke, does it mean Adam regrets it?
I think I think this is just multiverse Adam. I think we're just dealing with an Adam we've never met before. That's all.
You think
he has kids?
Like many of our bits, it's the mechanic that the film explores but manifests through one of the hosts.
I think that's
It's weird to be talked about this way. But then again, I make my
Very
kids
weird,
I make
I
my
imagine.
Kids
Highly
listen
confusing.
To me do this all the time. When they misbehave, you know.
I don't mean to turn this into throwing stuff at Adam because
you kind of do,
I
though.
I feel like Abe needs to talk more. But, and I also had problems with this stuff, but I will say I think it can be enjoyed, and many people have enjoyed it
totally.
On this level, even if you don't put it fully together, but you understand these are riffs and offers on if you ended up almost getting in a subterfuge situation with your friend via these time travel boxes with these specific rules, here's the types of fun and games you could get up to. So like whether I understand exactly, which is true if you watch the synopsis, that it's Aaron number 6 who has the earpiece on.
Right, right.
Even though I don't need to understand that, or I have to go to YouTube to understand that or be a genius to pick it up from the film, I understand the idea of wearing an earpiece in order to dupe the day and control for variables in a time travel situation you're trying to control. That is a good metaphor for how shit would get out of control with this very quickly. Like, I get it. I get satisfaction from the idea as a premise being thrown out, even if it's just a riff on time travel. I don't need it to fully connect.
Yeah, I just love the concept of you start creating essentially alternates, or you create permanence in the timeline because you do something that causes your initial person not to get in the box. So now there's two permanent people in the timeline, and that starts stacking. And now you have to start doing things to keep yourself from fucking up your own ambitions. So you're kind of having a clone war, so to speak.
Yeah.
And that's, I think that's a cool thing that's happening off screen, but they, you know, like they,
yeah, that's why it's called Primer. It's like A and A prime, because it's about time travel specifically as doubling. The problem is doubling. And that's its rule, and that's what it's playing with. For example, the guy, when the wife complains about rats in the attic, this I went right over my head. You're supposed to decode that that's one of the Aarons who's trapped in the attic, who had a fight with a different Aaron.
He's been like drugging the prime version of Shane Carruth is in the attic, as we see him kind of carry him up there. And then in an earlier scene, which that's one thing that really doesn't help it. It's like you have to remember and rewatch this film because that line will just go by and you'll be like, I don't know what that means. I don't know if I should scan that. But then later on, when they explain there's a very specific thing in the attic, your brain has to go back and go, oh, there was a line earlier about the attic. Ah, I see it now. It's
well, there's a 4-second linking scene where one Aaron says to another one, you seem more invested in this life. I'm going to go. And I'm like, I don't understand why that's necessary. But that scene is clearly there to make clone math work, right? Right.
Clone math
one
work.
Of them.
Yeah, I think
which
so.
Is
one
not,
has to
which
leave.
Is a very inhuman sort of Christopher Nolan way of writing where he's just like, I will depart this life now. You can check me off the list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of like, yeah, because we have to telescope it. I do love that there for every one of those, there's also small little good writing that I go, like, that's really clever way of doing that. Like, for example, the first time we ever see Abe and Aaron talking at the bench, Aaron asks him, I called you at work and I called your cell and like, where were you? And I love that Abe's response, who has just started to do duplicates, says, I'm not there. It's not, I wasn't there. It's, I'm not there. He's already thinking in terms of multiple identities moving around and doing their own thing.
Mm.
So there is some kind of, I think there's some kind of good writing in this, like in terms of like, they write around the problem,
yeah.
But it's also the character themselves seeing things different ways. And based off what they say, it kind of reveals like they tell on themselves.
It's an interesting, like, this is the dilemma of most movies with time travel, like where they're not explicitly creating a multiverse, where like mm-hmm. any kind of, you know, anytime you mess with the timeline, you've created a problem too big for you to solve. Right. Like
right.
that.
Although in like, right. Is it, I think this is right. So in like Butterfly Effect, most do it with you go back in time and inhabit your body as it was.
That's
and
the part that
your
is,
choices have been erased.
That's well, so that's the part that was sloppy about that movie and this movie. This movie had a better explanation for why you would retain the knowledge of the previous timeline. Butterfly Effect, there was no reason whatsoever why Ashton Kutcher's character would remember anything that happened. You know,
this one, it's like, no, there's another version of you.
Well, right. And
has
so
that knowledge.
Yeah. The fact that they continue
and you have
to exist
contend
is,
with them.
Yeah. That's the part where I'm like, yeah, I'm struggling to get my mind around that philosophically, because it feels like at some point then you're talking about disposing of bodies. It just becomes this whole like you got to murder all your clones.
That
you know,
is kind of what's implied. That's where this is going. He's choosing, but the problem is that you can't like just put yourself in the ground because that will cause a causality loop. So some paradoxes are okay, but other paradoxes aren't, because if you never, like, you want your previous self to never invent the box, but you're still in the timeline. But were you not in that timeline,
right.
you would never
you erase
exist.
It. Yeah, exactly.
So
but
once
it's
you're
impossible
there,
to
you're
have,
there.
It's impossible to have a box turned on before the time that it was invented, yeah?
Also true, yep. Yeah. It's not like we can go stop a 9/11. We'd have to wait for a new 9/11. Like a
as
9/11
we all are. it's going to change everything.
Yeah.
Question, am I right about this, that at one point one of the twists or something the movie questions is one of them takes a collapsible box into the box, so it's a box within a box?
They say they
what does
that
do
in a montage.
Does that make you go into the future?
No, I think it was I think it was him preserving the existence of the technology for when the other guy was trying to
I think I'm wrong about the thing I just said, because you could take a box within a box and go so far back that it's before.
I think that's what's implied with the montage at the end, right? With the explanation.
Well, he's building a big box based on what I'm.
But there's also
a
point where he says he took a collapsible box into the box, and I wonder why.
I think it's to explain why he was ahead of Abe when Abe was trying to go all the way back and erase the box in the first place. It's that he also did it and brought a piece of tech back with him. To preserve
I do
that.
Know that,
as the technology.
Like, I got it enough to understand that the 1-2 punch is, Abe's been betraying Aaron. Aaron's even more betrayed.
Yeah, outside super betrayed. Further down the road. So
he always had it figured out ahead. More than Abe. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought he brought in the box to put on his dick so he could have a time dick.
Young dick.
Like he could make
that's what you want. Yeah, like
iterations of dick.
Yeah, just peak time. Peak 22-year-old dick. Right?
Time dick.
Time dick. Man, if like, I still
must be called time dick.
If I still wrote screenplays, that's I'd write that idea down. That's a good one. You guys should write it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Why don't you have one of your servants write it, Adam?
Well, unfortunately, I got to tell you, my friend, I mean, we get along with them, obviously, but they wouldn't agree to the rate they'd have to pay us for the finder's fee and stuff. You know, they're not stupid. I don't hire stupid servants, Mike. That's the point. Mm-hmm.
It's hard
I think
to find
he's actually doing
days.
Something clever, which is now I want to know his story. I want the
he's
exposition.
Pulling you in.
He's no, pulling me in, unlike Primer.
He's done so many Primer loops that his life is pleasant.
He's just gone crazy. Yeah, his life is pleasant.
Look, Mike, I'm not going to deny that this is the happiest I've ever been. Like the life is great right now. You know what I mean? Like you wouldn't expect that. You know, I wouldn't expect it.
I think there's a few reasons why this movie did well for what it is.
Well, it's a small bar to clear. $7,000. You make that back quickly.
True. But I mean, just in terms of legacy and staying power and cult following and stuff like that. You know, because this, usually in this podcast, we're like, what are we fascinated with here? And I think there's a few things that this does fairly well, which is that there's like, there's a lot of working the problem. Like, I like working a problem type screenplays. Like, it's fun to see people go, oh, can we change the past? What does that look like? And then test it in a scientific way. Because we love the puzzle. We love to see the unraveling act and be like, what's true about the world?
Breaking Bad is often that.
Yes,
actually.
Exactly.
He loves process.
So even if it's not the best version of that, it does have that going forward. And even if you don't quite understand the details, you can watch the movie and be like, I don't really know what's going on. I think literally everyone loses the thread the first time and they don't get the duplicates as early as they should. Because there's like a section 3/4 of the way through the movie that just doesn't make sense. They just didn't film it well. Like, you couldn't have two Shane Carruths in one shot because they had no CG budget and stuff like that. Like, so they didn't make it uber clear exactly what's happening.
Well, After Effects budget, you don't strictly need CG to do. We
That's
did
true,
the Agents of Cracked with the doubles real well.
Yeah,
just
you
by
can
blending
do it pretty
pants
simply,
and shit.
But he chose not to go that route and just do everything in camera because that's what he understood.
I mean, he
Michel Gondry did doubles in camera. Boom.
Oh, dude, this guy doesn't have the sophistication that Michel Gondry has. He doesn't even have lights for nighttime. Funny. You know what I mean? Like his nighttime shots are like available light, you know?
He's so smart and technical, and it's such a gray and white world. I wonder if things mean, like, does the opening shot mean anything? Does he have cognizance of opening image because it's voyeuristic from the outside through the garage, the lit squares? And all it makes me think of is in the novel Gravity's Rainbow, which is notoriously hard to understand, there's this thing that recurs that's like 12 black squares and it does mean something, and there's a whole like essay you could write about it. Did either of you get anything from that, or Abe, anything from the, like, do you think he pays attention to visuals at all or has any thought process behind his visuals?
No, I mean, I think that there's some pretty cool shots in it, but I don't think that they're really thematically involved. No,
yeah.
I think the visual strategy is one that is creating a vibe, which is very effective, I think, for most of humans. I don't think most humans care about opening image. Like, for example, the science jargon and the shorthand, it's not exposition at all. The time machine is just a gray box. The sound effect is like an electrical hum, like a, not a sci-fi sound that you'd expect through, like, there's something going on with time here. The scene work is like over-realistic, and this visual strategy plays to that. And I think that its power is in kind of the quiet rhythm to everything that feels like it's not trying to be efficient like a movie, but more true,
yeah,
like
we're discovering
real life
stuff. Yeah,
it's kind of mumblecore, except for the fact
cinema
that mumblecore
verite.
Is not. Yeah, it's more cinema verite actually, because mumblecore is a heightened reality because it's in the dialogue, but yeah.
You can see, it's okay. You can see that he's learning filmmaking still in that, like, there's just a lot of coverage where you don't know what was said because we don't have the line on camera. And that's pure time management. And I admire and also critique him for the same thing. Like, I admire that he was able to make a film under these constraints, because it's so ambitious I wouldn't even try it. It's wild, right? And yet the cost of that is often the performances are shot from the wrong angle. Often there are lines off camera. Often the camera angle is something that you don't really see the thing you're supposed to look at, or it's not framed well for what, like, on a competence level, the visual storytelling isn't all there yet, you know?
Because he wasn't a filmmaker.
Right, exactly.
Yet. Like, he had never gone to a school. He's just like, I have an idea. I think it's a movie. I'm going to make a movie.
And he was right. It is. And that's incredible. Like, legitimately that incredible. Who I'm not taking away from
it. Kind of the coolest part of the story, honestly, about, you know.
I think that's why this movie endures in some ways, that everybody kind of wants to give it. Like, gives it the credit it deserves for. This guy came out of nowhere and made something interesting with no expertise and no money. That's pretty wild, you know?
It is. And it also, I mean, like, there are tons of movies out there that question what, like, movies ought to be. I kind of like that this movie forsakes stuff like the emotion that you're talking about. We all go into movies looking for specific things. Sometimes I like movies that are like, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do exactly the opposite. You know, you can point to even popular movies that still have big budget stars. Like, I don't know, The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford. That's a movie that it's like, this movie doesn't give a fuck about story. It doesn't care. It doesn't want you to understand events, really. It just wants you to soak it in, man. And this movie is like the opposite of that in a way. It's like, just soak in the idea of these, you know, this Wozniak and Steve Jobs doing something that would break reality. How would that fuck you up? And I think the movie is a success in that. It definitely accomplishes the lo-fi thing. I like that they are ethically like really kind of fucked up. Like, this is something Shane Carruth has said.
Well, they're not likable, yeah.
He's like, I wanted to create people who were very, you know, like, impressive in terms of what they could accomplish scientifically, but ethically, they're morons.
They turn on people. They turn on each other immediately.
Immediately. And they, like, do the stock thing for a few days. That's a question I had for both of you, is if you were a part of this tag team, what stuff you do?
Yeah, because I thought, what does it say about them that it's manipulate stocks? Because that is a boring answer to me. And it's not what I think would make my life materially better. I might get to it. Like, yes, making easy money would definitely come up at some point.
Double your money in a week.
But when I'm super excited, like, I just discovered time travel, I would do personal shit, not, you know what I mean? Well, like, I would take back certain actions.
It's clearly not, this is clearly not like time travel capital T. Like, they can't go back to the 1800s and stuff because they still have to live out the
Thomas
time.
Thomas Jefferson left a box running, dude. No.
I think that's part of why they settled on stocks, is like, look, if you can do the tiniest time travel ever where you don't actually get to skip anything. Yeah, you get one done. Like, you have to live the day still, you know, like, they still have to experience the time. That's the thing, right? So, like, in that sense, like, I honestly, I don't even need to time travel. I'm just happy for the way life's turned out and having you guys as friends and being here doing a podcast. What a joyful time I live in, you know?
What a good time.
Yeah. Why would I change anything? This is great.
I guess the fact that you have, so what's the length that I could stay in a box?
That's it.
Well, no, wait. That's why at the end, potentially, he's making a room-sized one so he can live in it for an arbitrary length of time. Yeah.
Yes. And that made sense.
So it becomes a war of who can go back to earlier and who can, they'll constantly be wasting more of their life spending time going back in time to oust the other one, which is a cool thing to think about.
One of the things that I gathered in this viewing that I didn't get in previous ones was, and it was like, to me, I was like, that's a slam dunk, just because, like, you want to see smart characters in movies. And when Abe kind of drops the info that he was like, before I did anything, I built a box and just turned it on in the fail-safe box. Yes. Yeah, where he's like, it's been running the whole movie in another storage facility. That is so fucking smart, because if you don't know what you're walking into and you're literally fucking with physics and causality, you want to have a reset button, right? Because you can, you don't know how off the rails this can get and how fast. And he turns out right. He doesn't have to use it, but it's just the threat of having it. Like, they're, I love that. Like, when people are smart in movies, it makes me very happy.
And question, and I think that did you say out loud pulls. In your room alone, that's a slam dunk?
I said, that's a slam dunk. Abe is super smart.
Abe smart, like movie smart.
Yeah, right.
I like that it's also a scientific.
Abe the character.
That actually felt true to his character in the scientific sense, too, which I really liked. You know,
and the idea of scientists as people who with shaky morals. Like, there are lines that execute
that's true
that.
Too.
He says, no, when he says, what does this company do? And he says, it doesn't matter. The line goes up. So in a nutshell, he is nutshelling and postcarding at points, resonant lines where it's like, but I don't know. I felt like the few times he tried to, it just felt really sweaty to me this time and kind of cringy at moments in the student film arena.
But
if you're going to do something like, I think this is cooler than what Blair Witch did, for example, Blair Witch basically gave us a couple interesting shots that your directions
like
you can take horror
some scary
in.
Moments
some scary looks
the shaking of the tent.
Well, I think
whatnot.
Also
but this gives you a real nut buster
argue that Blair Witch is a more meaningful film honestly, because I think Blair, even though I think Blair Witch is worse, I think it's a more meaningful film in that.
What do you mean by meaningful?
As a cultural
more
impact
impactful?
Yes, as a cultural impact,
I think, it definitely was bigger. That's
well, also,
sure.
Even though it was sort of a one-time idea, it created the idea of this, like, fictional narrative that you can sell online.
Huge.
And that, like,
and
people believed, you know?
It walked so Paranormal Activity could run.
That's right.
You know?
Could float around.
That's right.
Spookily.
Yeah.
Like a spooky ghost.
Absolutely. Completely agree.
Stuff I do. I think I could become Batman.
How would that work?
If you go back in time, back to that.
Well, you
question.
Make a bunch of money, and then you could put it in a bat cave.
Oh, so you'd invent all the stuff.
You'd just live the
bats going.
You wouldn't fight in the streets. You just live the Batman lifestyle.
I could fight in the streets. Who says I can't fight in the streets?
I just wouldn't want to.
If you're getting shredded too in the box, like if you're spending your box time getting shredded.
Spending my box time getting fucking shredded.
That's
dude.
Right.
Well, realistically, since it does.
Get a butler going?
Require you to go back in the box.
Yeah.
For in real time.
Right.
I would probably just use it as a fail safe, right?
Yeah.
Like, it would be a 4-day buffer. So on the rare occasion where it's tough to know, but on an occasion where I feel pretty confident I fucked up that major life decision, I would. Mm. I'd question, did I do it right? Maybe I should have done the other thing. And if I decide for sure I want to do the other thing, I would use it to go back and do it.
You
the
use
other
it
way.
As a you'd save scrumming, you know, like in
right,
it's
right,
Prince
right.
of Persia and Sands of Time is what it is.
And the reliving days, I mean, making money and like you were mentioning, Adam, all of the wish fulfillment stuff. It's definitely, this is an exercise in having premonition and how cool that would be. So we have movies like Next and
you get
like
to hide
knowing.
Satisfying events like he's like their example is punching your boss in the face.
It's true.
Mm-hmm.
Gets hidden between two realities and it's like it never happened.
I got to tell you, Abe, by the way, I don't mean to be rude. It doesn't actually take that much to get shredded. Like I was able to do it before my 5:30 schmitz every day with like 30 minutes of crunches and stuff. You know what I mean?
You say crunches.
You're
getting
up at 5?
Well, yeah.
Minimum?
Yeah, that's, the, you know.
But you
he
have
wants
to shower and shit.
Yeah, I shower afterwards. Crunches. You know, if you get your life in order, you know, it's not so hard. I've been shredded for years
And then I can become the Batman?
Yeah, dude, Batman's completely achievable for you.
See,
right?
I don't think you could become Batman with the 1 week.
I think... I think the box would really help me become a Batman.
Yeah.
Also, I do that time dick thing.
The aforementioned thing.
See, there's a bunch of things that, you know, like when It Follows came out, like one big game that almost everyone played who watched that movie was like, okay, so something I definitely do is I like time the average speed of the monster so I could figure out like where I should live on the earth and how long I could live there and then like fly back. And
yeah.
Like I can always avoid the It Follows monster. This movie also gave me a lot of that. Like I want to figure, can you talk to someone in the box while it's happening? Like on a walkie talkie? Like what would
you
that
mean
be?
Yeah. Someone in the outside world?
Yeah, like what would time, what would happen to
there the was a second, was a second question that I think that also raises, which is like, is there an advantage to sending somebody else back in time? You know what I mean? Like the only reason it's them going back in time is to stop there from being alternates, which doesn't work. And
doesn't at one point one of them drug the other one and put them in the box?
I think so.
They explore that.
Yes. I think so. It just seems like this box actually has
it's like spy versus spy.
Yeah, really,
honestly,
really. Well, and yeah, it would have been fun to see more of that. I know that's not realistic for this guy's budget, but that would have been fun to get into that.
That would have been a lot of fun games. You're absolutely right. I would also find out how close we can get, because there seems to be a thing where when you get close to someone, or like there's a proximity game, there's some rules of the game where it's like if you get too close to a prime version of yourself or a version of someone else, you kind of like lose your mind a little bit.
Well, they don't know that, do they? They just
figure it out over time that they faint when they're in each other's.
Oh, that's right, they do.
Is that what's happening?
Well, but one of them, one wrestles another one and gets them in the attic.
Right, I think you can fuck with yourself. I think it's that when people who have done a lot of time travel are near each other,
that's it's the more they time travel, their body starts to break down.
Because I think that's why they're. It's not like the argon that's causing them to bleed. Like they are irradiated by whatever. It's not radiation, but whatever this thing is, like the anti-gravity thing that they're making. The result is that they ultimately, there's something happening with their bodies. Because the more you do it, it seems like the more you get sick. So that's, there is a upper, there's a cap to this, all this shit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So
I think like,
well, per copy,
that's probably
that
game.
But different copies start having their own separate agendas. So I
that's
imagine
what I wish we got into.
Has a fresh
I wish we, yeah,
life.
I wish
we
got
did into
get
that.
Into straight up Time War or Clone
yeah,
War.
Like as dumb of a movie as this is, it's one of the things I like about Multiplicity. That like the clone, all the clones end up having a sort of, you know, dumb facsimile quality to them. And I, but like the small divergences that happen in the timeline would also happen in personality and in choice making and stuff.
Right.
Like, and that's a thing you don't see much
in the wallet.
Adam, am I misremembering? Didn't on the Harlan Ellison show, didn't we cover Trapped in the Fast Lane in the Red Queen's Race? Wasn't
I? We might have. I don't know how my week was that week.
Posits an answer to this, which I think is pretty viable, which is that the clones form a loose kind of federation for everyone's benefit, and they almost form like a small ethno state. And every new clone that's created, they either join that covenant or are killed by the existing clones.
So
I think that was
one way or the highway.
Yeah.
My way. Yeah, or our way.
We are Brandon. We are Legion.
Yeah. We are Legion. Yeah,
I think
that's
I was celebrating
cool.
my anniversary that time. I had to say no to that podcast. I listened to it. I really liked it. Really liked it.
I'm trying to figure out who you are, man. At first, I thought you were like Professor X, and because the mansion threw me off.
I'm Adam Ganser.
He's Adam Ganser. I think it's just an alternate. Yeah.
Successful entrepreneur, husband, father, man filled with joy. What else do you need to know?
Full of money with three kids. Are you Succession? Are you Brian Cox from Succession?
No, I'm Adam.
What happens besides the bloody nose?
I'm Adam.
Bloody ear.
Mm-hmm.
The bloody ear.
Oh,
the
their handwriting ear. Starts to go away, which I
yeah,
love
that was
because
vague, I thought.
They talk about how the issue is symmetry, and he says your right hand writing is starting to look identical to your left hand writing. It's not just that it looks bad, it's that it looks the same as the left. I think that's pretty chilling.
I think that's cool, especially because if the way they describe the parabolic kind of like back and forth, or at one point he says it's like two cul-de-sacs that connect. Like, the idea is not just symmetry, the thing looks like symmetry, but it's literally going back and forth between two points. And the hack, or what makes things work, is that you choose to get out of the merry-go-round, so to speak, at one point or another. So it looks exactly like the other thing, but you're getting out of it in a different spot. So it makes sense that it would be like, my halves are switching, or my halves are getting confused. I think that's cool, even though it's not like
our sacks have touched and I feel confused.
Yeah, that's Mars sack. Yeah. Time sack.
Ooh, that's a sequel right there. You got yourself, yeah, that's write that down, Abe. You guys should write that.
But yeah, it's all
so
nonsense.
So you know what, we talk about it. Well, this is what I still think the movie kind of sucks, but I like talking about it. And yeah. I think that's its appeal.
I think that's probably
working on your own time travel piece. Problems. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the appeal, is the watching all the little tendrils of the idea that were woven into the script somehow. That is cool. You know what I mean? Like, it's a fun conversation piece about what if real time travel, you know, in
but
a way
that
none of the other ones.
Yeah.
Right. In a way that none of the other time travel movies that you immediately think of do. Like, you don't watch Back to the Future and go, okay, man, like, let's think about how it all worked, you know, but Primer kind of invites that. Yeah. And that's what's fun about it.
Yeah. And I think this will probably be remade at some point with the time war stuff.
Adam,
involved.
Have you seen Upstream Color?
I haven't. I gotta be honest with you guys. Unless it's in my personal theater, I don't really get to watch movies too much these days.
Well, you can throw it up there. It feels
like.
Oh,
yeah. You guys want to come over and watch it? That'd
I do think
yeah,
he's.
Hell yeah.
I do think he's smart in a quick study, because for only having one feature experience and it being this experience, the way Upstream Color looks is like, well, he caught on really quick. Not saying it's the best shot film of all time, but seeing how much he's grown between the two films, it's like a real movie with interesting shot choices. So he gets much better. I really like Upstream.
Right on.
I think right he on. Was removed, by the way, from a project for domestic violence.
I've always hated him. Yeah, I said he was talentless from the beginning. I think
yeah,
that's...
No, right. Let me get in the box with my comments.
But is that true, Shane Carruth?
Yeah, I was reading up on his career like an hour or two ago, and that he was taking
so you
off
could
something.
Gotcha us.
No, why
oh,
would I do
damn.
That? Yeah, I just read that. It's just a thing that's, you know, worth noting.
Yeah, that's fair. That's
another thing
fair.
I wanted to note, if there's readers out there, I was just introduced to the sci-fi author Stephen Baxter, highly recommended. And this is something that I also appreciate about Shane Carruth, the apparent monster, is that I do like it when a real scientist writes. I don't know, it scratches a special itch, especially when their premises are out there. So like Stephen Baxter, if you like Primer, you'll like it, because he's a physicist and all his short stories are based on some true aspect of physics or quantum physics that he then extrapolates. What if it, you know, like what would happen as a result of that being that pattern being extended? And I do like stories based on real science. It always feels special when it's real.
You guys fuck with Contact? I fuck
of
with
course.
Contact.
Sure.
Carl everyone's Sagan's seen Contact.
Thing. Is that time travel though? It's just communing with a
no. It's
ghost.
Going to Vega. It's you should have sent a poet to talk
yeah.
to these.
You guys watch Spy Kids?
Aliens.
You ever seen Spy Kids?
I've seen Spy Kids.
It was
yeah.
Kelsey's favorite movie. I just want to know if
isn't
you've seen
she 17?
Kelsey's pretty dope.
Well, when she was a kid, she liked it when oh, she was a okay. child. Yeah, it's just her favorite.
Hell
she,
yeah.
We watch it sometimes over ice cream.
What's so. Hank and Andrew's favorite movie?
You know,
remember
I got
the names.
I got
good for you.
Thank you for caring about my children, Abe. You've always been a great friend to me.
Hell yeah.
Hank's favorite movie, believe it or not, is Jurassic Park. I mean, you know, classic of and Andrew's
Sure Par.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Andrew's
Primer,
I think
weirdly.
Is Dark Knight.
The Dark Knight
of
yeah,
the soul
sure.
or the normal one?
I think when you watch that movie, sometimes it gives you the same.
Yeah, right?
You know, yeah.
This is some great, yeah.
Yeah. These are some great
I
kids.
Love, I,
these
I,
are great
yeah,
kids.
Great
oh, you know who else movies. Hits their kids? Martin Freeman. I
oh,
recently
no.
found out. Well, he's admitted it.
Wait, did you say beat his kids?
No, hit his
Martin.
No, no. He said he's sworn at his kids and hit them, and he's done it twice. and he doesn't regret it, he'll do it again.
I can't.
Because sometimes like they're just little shits.
Yeah, I mean, they are
the
Martin
Hobbit,
Freeman's
ladies
kids.
And gentlemen.
the Bilbo beating his kids.
I think
I don't
he
even
like
know.
A smack upside the head, like a corporal punishment thing, you know?
Yeah, it was more of an offhanded comment. I'm looking it up now. But still, I think that's not an effective way to raise a child into becoming a responsible citizen.
Do you spank?
No. Susan and I
do
agreed early on that we don't do that.
Susan, finally.
Yeah. Is it a spanking
enters
mansion?
The equation. Well, it's interesting because I know that's how you earned all your money was spanking.
Yeah, that's spanking money.
That's
man.
Canonical now.
That's in there.
So you got in the box.
Getting there. Getting there was tough, but you know, being on top, it's pretty good.
That's fuck yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
I think it's about time for us to enter the last phase of our podcast here.
Get in our boxes and go back to the intro and fix it.
Let's close this wormhole. So let's decide between the three of us. For each of us, we have to answer the question, are we gonna close this wormhole? Are we gonna live in this world? Or are we gonna hybridize this world and our world and say we not only love this world, we want everyone to live in it.
Like for real. In our real
for
life.
For real.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what you guys doing a la the wormhole?
Please, Mike.
I think I'm gonna go ahead and close it because in this reality, Adam won't shut up about his kids, man. I don't want to hear about your stupid kids.
Mike, that really hurts. I was going to hybridize just because I feel like our worlds don't intersect enough anymore. And, you know, just having you guys with me here really would make my life complete. You know?
He's earnest.
Yeah.
And I'm going to live in this world.
Yeah.
Because I now have a rich friend who just said that I'm a cool guy.
So cool. Man, I'd love to fund your films, Abe. You want to stick around? I got a little bit of extra cash.
No shit, fuck. With
you
the spanking money, he can do this. All right,
I got spank
dude,
money
I don't
for
care
days,
where it
Mike.
Comes from. I can get in.
Welcome
on
back
some
to the fold.
Spanking. Yeah, baby. Yeah, baby. I don't give a fuck about.
And Adam, are you? What are you doing with the portal?
Oh, I'm staying here. I believe hey, this sure. is canonically the end of the show.
I guess. Well, I if we're talking really over. About, if we're talking truly about Primer, I guess I would do it. I would take the weak undo button. Would you guys?
The movie doesn't introduce anything that super scares me, but I would close it because I don't like that they invented this in Dallas. You know, like, I don't want that happening there.
I don't want
no
that
thanks.
To be the
yeah.
the hub of clones.
Yeah, I don't want
time
that.
Clones. Yeah. No, I mean, it's like, it would cause, if they could figure out a way to, like this would get patented and, like, the implications that the world could be broken like this would mean that the world is forever changed. And now they're selling it, and now it's like, what the fuck?
I still don't fully understand what a box inside a box would do. It feels like it would just return you to regular time flow.
I think you just have a box you can walk around in.
Sure.
Got yourself an extra box.
For your time dick.
Yeah. Time dick.